We ask you to turn to 1 Samuel chapter 1. 1 Samuel chapter 1. If you would, just simply insert your bulletin there as a placeholder. 1 Samuel chapter 1, and then go back to Exodus chapter 2, as I will begin reading there just in a few moments. Today is a special day. It is Mother's Day. And most all mothers. I wish I could say all, but I would.
Conservative, I guess, but most all parents, mothers, would say that they would do anything for the well-being and safety of their children. A couple of weeks ago, I watched one of my now becoming favorite television shows, and it's the TV drama that comes on Wednesday nights called Criminal Minds. Some of you may watch that as well. But there was a particular story there where a lady involved in the story took this doing everything they could for the safety of their children to what I would refer to as an extreme level. The story tells of a woman who was associated with a man who was in prison because he had been found guilty of several murders, actually identified as a serial killer. And she herself was also in prison, as she was found guilty and sentenced to die for the death of her own child. In time, it was discovered, however, that she had not killed her baby boy, but at a very early age had given that child away to an adoption agency. Why? Why would a mother do that? Why would a mother create that atmosphere, that deception? Why would she be willing to commit such an extreme act as giving her child away? In the closing scenes of the story that night, as she was on her way to the electric chair to pay for what she had been found guilty of, she was made aware that her child had in fact been found. And the authorities knew that she did not kill her child. They understood and discovered what had happened. Nevertheless, the lady pleaded with the police, with the FBI in this particular story. She pleaded with them for them not to disclose that the child was alive and that she was, in fact, his mother. Again, you would ask, why? Why? Well, as the story continued, she knew in her heart, she knew, as all of us would, that any association the son had with her and this man that was his father, this man known to be a serial killer, she knew that if this young boy had any association with the two of them, it would completely destroy his life and he would live the remainder of his days in shame. So she was willing to commit this very, very extreme act of love by completely disassociating herself from her child, because she knew how society would treat that child if he in fact acknowledged or knew or became aware of who his mom and dad truly were. An extreme act of love. There's another lady I'd like to read to you about. We find in Exodus chapter 2. There's another lady here who conducted, who enacted, who put into place an extreme act. We see her story here in Exodus chapter 2. You know it well. Now a man of the house of Levi married a Levite woman, and she became pregnant and gave birth to a son. When she saw that he was a fine child, she hid him for 3 months. But when she could hide him no longer, she got a papyrus basket for him and coated it with tar and pitch. Then she placed the child in it and put it among the reeds along the bank of the Nile. His sister stood at a distance to watch what would happen to him. Then Pharaoh's daughter went down to the Nile to bathe, and her attendants were walking along the riverbank. She saw the basket among the reeds and sent her slave girl to get it. She opened it and saw the baby. He was crying, and she felt sorry for him. "This is one of the Hebrew babies," she said. Then his sister asked Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and get one of the Hebrew women to nurse the baby for you?" "Yes, go," she answered. And the girl went and got the baby's mother. Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Take this baby and nurse him for me, and I will pay you." So the woman took the baby and nursed him. When the child grew older, she took him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. She named him Moses, saying, "I drew him out of the water." Now, brief history here. You know the story well. Pharaoh had become a little anxious because the number of these Israelite slaves had grown so large. And so he feared a rebellion from them. And so he asked the nursemaids, as they were helping the Hebrew ladies bear their children, to kill the children as they were born, most particularly the male children. But the midwives couldn't do it. And so he enacted another policy that the soldiers would go throughout his kingdom, and all of the Hebrew children, all of the males, excuse me, that were born, he would simply put them to death. And so this mother, Moses' mother, knew that this child's association with her, his association with the Hebrews, would cost him his life. So she gave him away. An extreme act of love. We know how the story went on from there. Turn with me to 1 Samuel. Here is another lady who has committed an extreme act of love. But there's more in Hannah's story. Begin chapter 1, reading the chapter. "There was a certain man from Ramathaim, a Zuphite from the hill country of Ephraim, whose name was Elkanah, son of Jeroham, the son of Elihu, the son of Tohu, the son of Zuph, an Ephraimite. He had two wives. One was called Hannah, and the other Penani. Penani had children, but Hannah had none. Year after year, this man went up from his town to worship and sacrifice to the Lord Almighty at Shiloh, for Hophni and Phinehas, the two sons of Eli, priests of the Lord. Whenever the day came for Elkanah to sacrifice, he would give portions of the meat to his wife Penani and to all her sons and daughters. But to Hannah he gave a double portion because he loved her and the Lord had closed her womb. And because the Lord had closed her womb, her rival kept provoking her in order to irritate her. This went on year after year. Whenever Hannah went up to the house of the Lord, her rival provoked her till she wept and would not eat. Elkanah, her husband, would say to her, 'Hannah, why are you weeping? Why don't you eat? Why are you downhearted? Don't I mean more to you than 10 sons? Once when they had finished eating and drinking in Shiloh, Hannah stood up. Now Eli the priest was sitting on a chair by the doorpost of the Lord's temple. In bitterness of soul, Hannah wept much and prayed to the Lord, and she made a vow saying, 'O Lord Almighty, if you will only look upon your servant's misery and remember me, and not forget your servant, but give her a son, then I will give him to the Lord for all the days of his life, and no razor will ever be used on his head.' As she kept on praying to the Lord, Eli observed her mouth. Hannah was praying in her heart, and her lips were moving, but her voice was not heard. Eli thought she was drunk and said to her, 'How long will you keep on getting drunk? Get rid of your wine.' 'Not so, my Lord,' Hannah replied. 'I am a woman who is deeply troubled. I have not been drinking wine or beer. I was pouring out my soul to the Lord. Do not take your servant for a wicked woman. I have been praying here out of my great anguish and grief. Eli answered, go in peace, and may the Lord, may the God of Israel grant you what you have asked of him. She said, may your servant find favor in your eyes. Then she went her way and ate something, and her face was no longer downcast. Early the next morning they arose and worshipped before the Lord, and then went back to their home at Ramah. Elkanah lay with Hannah, his wife, and the Lord remembered her. So in the course of time, Hannah conceived and gave birth to a son. She named him Samuel, saying, because I asked the Lord for him. When the man Elkanah went up with all his family to offer the annual sacrifice to the Lord and to fulfill his vow, Hannah did not go. She said to her husband, after the boy is weaned, I will take him and present him before the Lord, and he will live there always. Do what seems best to you, Elkanah, her husband, told her. Stay here until you have weaned him. Only may the Lord make good his word. So the Lord stayed at home and nursed her son until she had weaned him. After he was weaned, she took the boy with her, young as he was, along with a 3-year-old bull, an ephah of flour, and a skin of wine, and brought him to the house of the Lord at Shiloh. When they had slaughtered the bull, they brought the boy to Eli, and she said to him, as surely as you live, my Lord, I am the woman who stood here beside you praying to the Lord. I prayed for this child, and the Lord has granted me what I asked of him. So now I give him to the Lord. For his whole life he will be given over to the Lord, and he worshiped the Lord there. The story of Samuel, his mother Hannah. Three stories, three ladies. What do these three ladies have in common? They were, first of all, willing to sacrifice their own natural motherly desires. They were also willing to go to an extreme for the safety and the well-being of their children. Sounds a little like Jesus Christ, doesn't it? We do have in these two stories biblically a foreshadow of Christ. I would like to concentrate here for just a moment on the story of Samuel and his mom Hannah, because she did something here that I think, and I believe the scriptures lead us to acknowledge, she did something here that every mother should at some point in their child's life, earlier rather than later, that they should do. First of all, we must acknowledge that she did uphold her vow as she made in her prayer. But look at verses 27 and 28. First of all, she acknowledged, I prayed for this child, and the Lord has granted me what I ask of him. And then here is the act. So now I give him to the Lord. For his whole life he will be given over to the Lord. Now, this is not a typical exchange. This is not an exchange of ownerships. This is a recognition of true ownership. Hannah acknowledged Samuel's true place. Why? Why would Hannah do this? How many times had Peninnah ridiculed and made fun of that she had no children? She wept many times, the scriptures tell us. But yet when she did receive the child, what did she do? Gave the child away. Why? Why? Well, here is the point of the story. Hannah knew something very important that all of us as parents, and today as we celebrate Mother's Day, I pray you as a mom would understand. More important to honor and to recognize and to acknowledge God for His mercy and for His gift than it is to serve your own motherly desires.
It is much, much more important to do as Hannah has done here, to recognize God's gift, to recognize God's mercy, to recognize God as the giver of the gift, than to serve yourself in the possession of the gift. And you'll say, Pastor Tim, are you talking about, or are you talking against me being a good mom and loving and caring? Absolutely not. That is the purpose of the gift, and we will get into here just in a moment. But please hear me clearly. We must first honor and recognize the giver of the gift before we get so caught up in the gifts given. Listen to Hannah's prayer. It's chapter 2. I only read portions of it. Please, I would ask you to go read it in full. Hannah says, "My heart rejoices in the Lord, and the Lord my horn is lifted high. My mouth boasts over my enemies, for I delight in your deliverance. There is no one holy like the Lord. There is no one besides you. There is no rock like our God. Do not keep talking so proudly, or let your mouth speak so arrogant, or in such arrogance. For the Lord is a God who knows, and by Him deeds are weighed." Hannah was more interested in acknowledging God than she was in any kind of retribution toward Peninnah. Here she is simply saying, "God, you take care of her. I'm worshiping you." There was no paybacks. There was no gloating. There was no saying, "Look what God has given." No. In her words, she acknowledges God for His gift and His mercy. And then she also acknowledges that God will be the one who serves out the revenge, who serves out the notice, who serves out any kind of punishment that Peninnah might need because of her actions. Hannah was involved in none of that. Many of you here this morning have made extreme actions, have committed extreme acts of love for your children. Moms, you have sacrificed for your children. You have gone without so they could have. You've not done what you would like to do so that you could care for what they needed. You've sacrificed much. You give until you give, could give no more. You bring them to church. You tell them about Christ. Now, I know some of you in this room will probably say, "Well, bring them. The church ain't that big a deal." I can tell that by your attendance. I'm sorry to be so blunt. But bringing them to church, teaching them about Christ, as we have acknowledged in two here this morning, is the greatest thing you can do on your way to giving that child to God. The most important thing a mother can do is to realize what Hannah realized. The child you hold in your arms, the child you hold in your arms, I see several of you, she is a gift. He is a gift. Gift is yours only for a time. And in that time, you are to love, you are to nurture, you are to teach that child, but you do not own that child. That child belongs to God. You are simply a steward. And one day you will have to respond to the stewardship. Your most extreme and important act of love is to give that child to God, and then to recognize in your worship and to recognize in your words and to recognize in your teaching that that child belongs to God. My role here is to teach and to love and to show Him Christ, to show her Christ. So how do we do that today? We see Hannah's story. We see how Moses' mom did it. How would you do it today? What model? What teaching? What example would you follow? Would it be that teaching that we see on our television screens almost every day of Dr. Phil's and his New Age popular psychology? How about the recently acknowledged Reverend Oprah? Do you know that's how she's referred to now? Side note here for just a moment. I pray that none of you get caught up in her New Age spirituality, because she does not acknowledge Jesus Christ as a Savior. Some of you moms that are just a bit older, how about the teachings of Dr. Spock of so many years ago? Please. No, we who are Christians are bound to follow the teachings of Holy Scripture. If you acknowledge yourself as a Christian, then you have one resource. You have one source. You have one model. You have one area to look to provide any kind of teaching for your child. If you look anywhere else, then you violate these Scriptures. In our vision statement that we have recently adopted here at New Sterling, we say that we seek to live the full spectrum of life in the complete obedience to the full counsel of God. That means that we seek to live our entire lives to the entire word of the Holy Text. Pure and simple. With our children, that is one of the places most particularly where we should be doing that. We should be looking to the Bible. How did the Bible tell us to teach our children? Well, there's many places we could look. We could go to Deuteronomy. We could go to Proverbs. We could go to many places. But I would like to give you something a bit more tangible. Let's look to the teacher himself. How did Jesus Christ teach and lead and care for and love those he cared so much about? You say, no, Pastor Tim, Jesus didn't have any children. Well, you haven't read the Da Vinci Code. Chuckle, that's a joke. Seriously. No, he did not, and he was not, and is not married. But he did show the fatherly, the motherly, as Jeff referred to, the motherly love of those 12 that circled around him every day, of the 70 that he sent out, of the other masses that came to him for teaching. He showed them, and he cared for them, as I would prescribe you as a mother to care for those under you. First of all, he taught them the truth. He taught them the truth. He spoke the truth. He acknowledged himself to be the truth. He taught them the truth of Scriptures. He didn't get involved in any of the popular psychologies of that day, and they were there in the Greek culture. He taught them the truth. Mom, the truth. He provided an example. He not only spoke the words, he then lived the words. And moms, you know, your children are watching. They you know, they're going to do what you do. Provide them an example. He gave them what they needed, not necessarily what they wanted. Listen closely. He gave them what they needed, not what they wanted. Peter wanted Jesus to stay. He didn't want him to die and go. But yet Jesus turned around and named him Satan. Have you done that to your child? I pray not. But still, Jesus could have said, well, Peter, you might be right. I'll just stay here with you. No. Because that would violate everything he was about. Moms, you know what's best for your child. A 13-year-old who thinks they need to have a cell phone? Really? That's your call. But look to what they need, not necessarily to what they think they want. He also maintained his overall objective and cared for them within that objective. He was going to the cross to die. And he taught them in that scope of work. Here's one for you. He prepared them for his leaving. He prepared them to live without him. Moms, your job is to prepare your children one day to leave. And like birds who push their small ones out of the nest and watch them tumble to the ground, but yet they gain wings and fly. Moms, if you hold on too long, there are ramifications that you will have to address later. You know the right time, but you are to raise them to leave. Teach them to leave. And then finally, he ultimately gave, Jesus Christ ultimately gave everything for their security. He gave his life. Now, you are not Jesus Christ, and so it's not necessary for you to give your life so that your child will have security. But you are to do these things so that they can leave your home and live a healthy, secured, right life out in this world. Folks, I have to tell you, when an individual comes into my office and seeks guidance and seeks counseling, after the niceties of conversation, one of the first questions I ask, tell me about your dad. Tell me about your mom. And things begin to fall down. Things begin to tumble away because the relationship of mom and dad at home plant the foundation for everything else. Your child will see, know, whatever, when they leave your home. What kind of base are you building? Is it a healthy one? You know, it's sad, but the most extreme thing that moms might do for their children today is to simply teach them about the Lord. Some might call that extreme. That's pretty basic in our circles. But out in the world out there, the most extreme thing you might do is teach them about Christ. So I pray that you will look to the Lord. I pray that you will look to these scriptures to find your resource, to find your words, to find your examples of how to teach your children and to prepare them for this world. In the context of love, we see it. In the context of this, we find it first in Jesus Christ. We find it first in His love for us. So, Mom, acknowledge the love of Jesus Christ in your life, and then turn and teach your children that same love.